My name is Fermi Palak, and I am from Cleveland. I'm here to talk to you just for a few minutes about what the Chizuk mission is for me. For many years, I know Barry, and for many years, I saw her in the supermarket aisle, and she would ask me, "Fermi, come on the Chizuk mission." And I looked at her, and I smiled, and I said, "Okay." And I walked on and never did anything. 4 years ago, right after October 7th, she said, "Fermi, come on the mission." And at that time in my life, I had some challenges, and they were really loud. And I said, "Okay, this is the time, and I need to go." And I went on that mission, and it changed my life. A couple of weeks ago, I had a conversation that left me feeling unseen and unheard. As I sat with that feeling, I was taken back to a memory from childhood. I desperately wanted to go to sleepaway camp, and my parents always went to Israel, and they didn't want to leave me behind for the summer. And I remembered how invisible that little girl felt. So instead of pushing that feeling away, I sat with her, and I had compassion for her. And I told her, "We are going to camp now, because in 2 weeks, we're going to the women's Chizuk event. We have friends, we have a place to belong, we get to learn, we get to grow, and we get to be inspired together." For those of you who are in Rabbi Danishevsky's classes, she's here with me. When I first attended the Chizuk Mission event, I left feeling inspired, uplifted, I was on fire. But then I found myself asking, "Now what? Do I just wait until the next event so that I can feel that inspiration again?" And the answer was no. I began attending a weekly chabura given by Barry on Shabbos, and I discovered that growth doesn't happen only at big events. It happens when women gather consistently to learn, share, and encourage one another. Chaburas create a place where people feel seen, heard, and connected. Later, Barry asked me to help reimagine our monthly Rosh Chodesh events in Cleveland. We formed a committee, we planned out months in advance for speakers, and Baruch Hashem, they have flourished. 1 month, we had over 100 women come one evening. It was a panel. And that very day, as Hashem always unfolds everything in the right timing, we were setting up at our very own Rivka Cohn's house. And her husband mentions that his friend sent him a song, and the lyrics seem to describe what we were trying to do. The song was called Asara B'nei Adam by Aaron Rizal and Yishai Ribo. And I'm going to read you the lyrics. "The Jewish people will not be redeemed through suffering, not through oppression, nor through upheaval, nor through turmoil, nor through hardship, nor through lacking, even the necessities of life. Rather, redemption will come through 10 people sitting together, each one learning and reviewing Torah with their friend, and their voices are heard." Listen again. "Redemption will come through 10 people sitting together, each learning with a friend, and their voices being heard." Those words struck me deeply. And after reading those words, I knew I had to take the opportunity to speak to the audience that night about chaburas in our community. And since that evening, Cleveland has around 10 to 15 chaburas, led by not famous speakers, just regular women like us. And we now have chaburas in Brooklyn, Five Towns, Lakewood, and hopefully Queens. Did Queens start? Okay, good. Yeah, LA also. Okay, great. That's what I believe the Chizuk mission is really about. Yes, its goal is to strengthen our relationship with Hashem, but at its core, it really starts with strengthening our relationship with ourselves and with one another. And when we begin to truly see ourselves and truly see one another, we naturally develop a deeper and more authentic relationship with Hashem. To be in a chavura, you do not need to be a teacher. You don't need to be a famous speaker. Often the greatest learning comes from the women sitting beside you. from her experience, from her strength, and her hope. As you leave here today, I hope you leave not only inspired, but ignited. Every one of us has the responsibility and the privilege to bring another person closer in her relationship with Hashem. As Barry always reminds us, there will never be another you. Exactly. From the beginning until the end of time. And in the beautiful words of Shira Smiles, every action creates a cosmic reaction. So I leave you with this question. Over these 3 weeks and the 9 days, will you be the ashes or will you be the flame? If you have ever thought about starting a chabura, but felt nervous or unsure about where to begin, come speak with me afterwards. I'd be honored to help you bring that light into your community. Okay. And now it's my privilege to introduce our next speaker, Chani Jerivel. For nearly 4 decades, Mrs. Chani Jerivel has worked in the fields of chinuch and counseling, helping individuals deepen their relationship, personal growth, and connection to Torah values. She lives in Rockland County, New York, and currently maintains a private practice as a licensed clinical social worker, working with individuals and couples both in person and virtually. An engaging lecturer, she combines Torah true hashgacha with psychological insight, bringing spiritual concepts to life in a practical and relatable way. She's the author of Spira in Our Lives by Feldheim, a relationship guided based on the midot of Spira Soomer. She also leads Inspired Living, a WhatsApp community of several thousand women who receive her daily and weekly 5-minute talks on timely Torah and personal growth topics. Welcome. So I was going to try to pull off a good fake it and try to make it, but I'm very grateful to have a chance to be here because I need to be somewhere. I have a little grandson right now in surgery that we were waiting for a couple of days, and the doctors just decided to whisk him in when I stepped out of my daughter's house and said, okay, honey, I'll be right back. So I think it was Basher for me to have this list of sharing, learning, and thinking, and growing in this list that he should keep on learning and growing. His name is Yehuda Leib Ben Sara. So I guess I have the credentials for giving this talk because I went from a kippitar house helping my daughter-in-law to a house of helping surgery. So I think I got it. I know that all of us, if we had our druthers, we would love to raise kids, and for that matter, to live a life that was pain-free. I love what you said, the woman who was, what was your name? Frumi. Love what Frumi just said, that it shouldn't come from pain, right? We hope that things will come from connecting, from growing. So if we would like a pain-free life, I want to introduce you to a girl that I read about in a New York Times article from 2012. Now, hearing that I've been in chinuch 40 years, I just want to make a note that I did start teaching at the age of 2, just to make the distinction. So I remember reading this in the New York Times. I actually looked up the date that it was printed. She's now 27. She actually just got married. We could talk about it. But her name is Ashlyn Blocker, and she lives in a small town named Patterson, Georgia. So Ashlyn Blocker was born with a very rare genetic disorder, and it affects her nerve endings in a very bizarre way. Ashlyn Blocker cannot feel physical pain, and she cannot sense any extreme temperature changes to the cold or to the hot, which you'd say, this is amazing. The kid who could never be in pain. Ashlyn Blocker had a very challenging childhood because she couldn't feel pain. She would walk on the kitchen through glass and not notice the shards piercing her feet. She would go to the orthodontist and not know that the braces were too tight and doing a job on her gums. She would have a really fun time with curling irons because her ears
I'm not even going to go there, but it's interesting. So Ashlyn Blocker describes how she lived her life without pain, but she lived her life in constant fear. Fear of the pain that she wasn't feeling. Because, ladies, as much as we should never wish for it, and as much as we should never hope that anyone experiences it, there is strangely a privilege to pain. And the privilege of pain is that it gives us warning, it gives us understanding, and it gives us the ability to feel. Feeling is not an easy thing to do. It would be much easier in life to sort of live in that la-la experience. You know, a very dear friend who I love to pieces, but she's a Pollyanna. I always tell her, you're a Pollyanna. And she texted me this morning, like it was any morning. She says, oh, honey, I was just thinking of this and this and this. And I said, that's so nice. She says, how are you? I said, not great. We have this going on. We have something that we're concerned about. And I know that she davens, and I know that she will, but she didn't write back, because it's messy. It's a messy thing to experience pain. And we would all, I remember Rebbetzin Feuer. Anyone from Muncie remember Rebbetzin Feuer? So I remember bumping into Rebbetzin Feuer in Wesley Kosher. And I said, Rebbetzin, how are you? I'm so happy to see you. She said, don't ask unless you have time for the answer. Just don't ask. Because I'm sick of someone asking me, and I'm explaining my kidney issue, and they're in the cereal. So the beauty of being real about our pain, it is a privilege. And for those who've experienced difficulty, then even the pain, the severe pain of loss, and grieving those losses, what does it prove? That if I'm feeling that loss, it means I also love. I don't want to be someone who doesn't love enough of it. And you can't have one without the other. So feeling is a big deal. And being that I'm in a room of connectors, and I'm in a room of people that love each other, and that's always obvious, the Chizuk mission has made it like a happening thing to connect through learning. It's amazing. I want you to imagine two close friends who share everything with each other. They work on things together, they shop together, they joke together, they help each other plan events, they finish each other's sentences. They know each other so intimately. And imagine that one suffers a loss. Her friend could take the route of saying, I miss you, and send those emojis with the hearts or the one, you know, Kanainahara. Or she could say, I'm rolling up my sleeves. And I know which coffee to bring you, and I know which pictures you want to show that person, and I know when you want quiet. And I know which story you're thinking about, even though you're not up to saying it. And I know that it's the hardest time we ever shared, but it's a time that proves our connection the most. And if I would have just called you and said, I miss not shopping together, that wouldn't cut it, because it wouldn't be feeling. It also wouldn't hurt as much. But we gotta decide in life. If we're gonna hurt and experience that privilege of hurting, or if we're gonna shy away from it, because it is just too messy. And I don't know the right things to say. And I don't know how to fix it, and I don't know how to make it better, so maybe I'm just not the one. Let's see. We're coming, ladies, tomorrow to a heavy time. I remember a number of years back, I was asked to come to a community and speak on Tishba. The woman called me the day before. She says, I know it's Tishba, but you'll keep it light, right? You know, the time is maybe not light. She said, it's very important. Everybody's thinking and letting me know. We're coming to Tishba tomorrow. And Rosh Chodesh of tomorrow. And I think in life, to know where we want to get, and that's all we need to know, where you're going to give away, maybe it's very serious. But if you want to know where you're going to, you got to have a plan. Jews are going and bustling and strategizing, and it sounds familiar, like Jews should go to war and people hate us, what do we do? And then nothing cries out, bozo at dinner, bozo at dinner. That's not the way, that's not the city. Think where you're headed. From tomorrow till next Thursday, we got a job to do. And what is that job? Because I want to get it right. It's been a long time before. This is kind of our first rodeo when it comes to Tisha B'Av, right? And even if intermittently Hashem gives us the gula, we still have this job to do to get this time right. Times of life, times of Jewish life are given to us to tap into the feelings and avodos that are attached to them historically and relevantly here and now. What is the avoda of Tisha B'Av that we're trying to get right? And in what way is Tisha B'Av, regardless of its success in a visible way or not, in what way is it a moed? Tisha B'Av is called a moed. It's a yontif. It's a gathering time of some sort of happiness that comes from it. What is the moed of Tisha B'Av? What is the work of Tisha B'Av? And the avoda, we're told, is feeling. Tisha B'Av is a time for avoda, is to feel. But many of you are thinking, no, that sounds great, but we always feel. Our life, our calendar year is about feeling, and I'll prove it to you. I'll prove it to you. Rosh Hashanah, I feel. Rosh Hashanah is a time where I feel the joy of coronating God. He's my everything. He's on top of me. I have an awareness of him. I'm making it new. I'm making it bigger. I feel. Yom Kippur, I feel the joy of a second chance. I feel the excitement of Hashem allowing me a clean slate and allowing myself to forgive myself and others and him for that matter and start again. So I feel. Sukkot, I feel. Sukkot, I feel protection. I feel the embrace of Hashem. Chanukah, Purim, I feel. I feel the opportunities of his miraculous interventions, even in galus, even in exile. I'm feeling. And when it comes to Pesach, I'm feeling the pride of being his nation, the pride of knowing that he can do anything. And Shavuos, no question. Shavuos, I'm feeling. I'm accepting the Torah. I have the beautiful, beautiful sense of our nation that I'm feeling all over the place. The whole year I'm feeling. So what's Tisha B'Av when it comes to feeling? And what's the difference, ladies? I'm not taking away from all those feelings. Those feelings are who we are. And we need those to concretize our relationship with God and our own sense of self and identity. It's a big thing nowadays. Concretize. Very good. So, what's the beauty of Tisha B'Av just opposed to those other feelings? Those other feelings are very satisfying feelings. Those other feelings are very clean feelings. They're new feelings. They're joyous feelings. There's fresh feelings. There's optimism. But Tisha B'Av is a different type of feeling. Tisha B'Av is a time that we feel God's pain. And we hold it with him. And we make it ours. And as we proved with that mashal of the friendship, there's nothing else in a relationship that makes you feel that way. To know that you can identify with my pain, that you could hold it. You don't have to do anything but that. You know, women are phenomenal models of having this ability. It's just so much us. Where does a woman create life? In what we call the rechem, the womb. The rechem is the root of the word rachamim. That what does it mean to have empathy and compassion? It's not about what I do. It's that I just create that space. Right? I share this story so often, it's become like my story, and I hope it will keep being my story, because it just created this sense of, wow, that's what it looks like. I don't know why, but in New York, you can't graduate seventh grade unless you experience Philadelphia. Right, the Philadelphia trip, capital T, capital P. So how many of you were dragged into being a chaperone on the Philadelphia trip? More than you would have liked. Okay, I was there. So I went on so many Philadelphia trips, and I said, that's it. They called me again. I said, no, the Liberty Bell is not cracking any more than it did the last time I was there. Been there, done that. No more Philadelphia. They said, Mrs. Durbell, please, we really need it 2 days, and we have nobody else. I said, you know what? I'm going to be selfish. If you add one new piece to the itinerary of that trip, I think I would go. But it's got to be this. How about we add a trip to a Shmuel Convent? How about we bring the seventh graders to a little meeting of Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky speaking to them? Mrs. Durbell, if you arrange it, it's yours. You're going to go on the trip. So I called at that time the Rebbetzin. I still can't believe I'm saying the last shalom. She said, honey, I'm going to make healthy snacks, and it's going to be great. So they're sitting at the table, and these girls were spoken to like queens. The Rosh Hashiva gave them such respect, and they felt so good about themselves. And they're piling out to leave, and the Rebbetzin says, wait, does anybody want to stay a little longer and get a bracha or advice from the Rosh Hashiva? So who lines up? All the kids that don't need it. I want my mother, I want another baby, right? Like all those kids. So they're lining up, and there was a girl, like an outlier, and I still know that I did not do anywhere near what she needed in terms of her kingdom. She was going through a really dark, difficult life. And the Rebbetzin said to me, bring her. She has the weight of the world on her shoulders, physically, you could see it. So I said, she's not going. She said, I'm going to get her to go. And she does her magic. She brings this girl to the Rosh Hashiva. We're sitting at a table, myself, the girl, the Rosh Hashiva, and the Bivadel, the wonderful Rebbetzin. And he says, what can I do for you? And she starts talking. She's really sharing. And he listens, and it's not easy stuff to listen to. And he said, just a moment. Goes to the kitchen, comes back with a pen and paper. And he says, tell me, what was the name of that brother? And your father, what was his name? He writes it down. No, these are very big problems. These problems are probably too big for you or I to solve. These are problems that only Hashem could help with. Tell me, he says to this seventh grader, what time do you dive in school every morning? And she says, 10 to 9. He says, you know, sometimes if more than one person davens for the same thing at the same time, it helps. What if you and I both have them in mind at 10 to 9 every morning? That girl left the house without anything having changed, but she was 10 feet tall. Because someone made her feel that the way she felt was not too big for them. That they could create a rechem to hold her pain in a way that she wasn't alone. And she didn't feel too fragile because someone else was there with her. And one of my sons, their community had big enough that they were able to stick their struggle with her rabbi, which is not a small thing for a group of young yeshiva guys to look for a rabbi that they believe in, that they agree on. So they decided that the last advice of a great person, the last advice, what to look for. And he said, look, you don't need me to tell you that, you know, you're very knowledgeable men. We know a lot. You probably all have your people that you ask your questions to. So I can't tell you what specifics you need personally. But you cannot compromise when it comes to finding someone who will be no safe hole in the congregation. Who's going to feel the pain? Who's going to feel with you? Who's going to be there for you? I know this story proves how socially off I am, but it was during Shiva. You're allowed to, like, you know, you get a permission slip for being socially off at Shiva. So I remember sitting next to my beloved brother at Shiva, and his Rav came in to make a Shiva call, knee to knee, holding his hands. And he looked into his eyes, and I saw the tears. And he said, tell me, have you known? I don't think I had this close of knowing your mother. Who's the mother that had you? And my brother started talking. And he gets up to leave, and I said, could I just say how unbelievably jealous I am? Could you leave my rug for just 5 minutes right this second? Just need to leave my rug. But that feeling of being felt with,
that's the avoda, ladies, of Tisha B'Av. The avoda of Tisha B'Av is that I'm proving to Hashem that I could feel his pain. Maybe I can't identify with everything about his loss. I can't identify with what a mikdash was. I don't wake up in the morning wishing that I could see Kohanim knee deep in blood. I can't relate to that yet. I don't know. Maybe you can. But I could relate to God wishing that he could do more and give more. And like Fumi said, be heard more and be seen more. Right? Intimacy is what he wants to. Into me, see. Know me. Hear me. Know that I never had an agenda other than just loving you so tremendously. So we would think that if that's the case, he would really want us to feel and feel through Tisha B'Av, especially at the climax of when the Mikdash was burning in a way that it was tremendously difficult. So what's the story?
I want you to come to appreciate this question. Tisha B'Av, when do we pull up our chairs and sit down and minimize the morning and start being busy and eating and cooking? Chatzos. What was going on historically at Chatzos? The worst of the worst. You would think that that's the time to intensify the grief and the morning. But that's when Hashem says, okay, honey, get a chair. Take it easier. Okay, function. Hashem is so beautifully and magnificently in love with us that he's so sensitive to keeping us in a place of stability and not going to extremes of feeling in a way that discombobulates. I haven't used that word in a lot of years. Discombobulate. I used to be so obnoxious as a kid that I had this thing, I could say words backwards. And I remember a teacher saying, discombobulate me. I said, backwards to her, and she didn't know what to do with it. So I have hope, one of my granddaughters, I think he's as obnoxious, but we'll see. Anyway, so look what happens when we leave a loved one. Hashem loves us. And he knows there's a bigger picture. He would love for us to believe that there's a bigger picture. He says it's the fact that we're not going to see it now. When the person had just died and I'm so affected. So Hashem says, okay, you got to have a construct. You're expressing all this in a real way. And first he allows me to be an omen, where I feel it and nothing else is on my head. Don't even worry about brachas, just focus on the grief. You're not held accountable for anything. You could lose it. You could lose it. And then he gives us the shiva. And then he gives us the shloshim. And then the yard side. And slowly we're breathing. And we're appreciating. And we're remembering. Maybe even laughing. Because he eases us from the intensity down to the functionality. Are you with me? When it comes to experiencing his loss, he knows that it's not easy for us to experience his loss. For us to have that language and that understanding of what the world could be, and we're so far from it, we're so distracted from it. Hashem says, you know, I know you're so busy. I know that your year is hectic and you have a lot going on, and I love it that you do, and I want you to be with Simcha. But we have to take a few weeks a year, and an unstructured time in the summer, when it's simpler, to let's make some time to think about what we could be for each other. And he built it slowly, gently, for 3 weeks, to contemplate, just not have the same joy, not have the same experience, music, and all that. And then, okay, you're feeling it a little? Let's try Tisha B'Av. This was a hard time for me. I had hopes to bring you in. But then we get to Chatzos. We're feeling. Hashem says, stop! That's all I needed. I just wanted you to know that you could feel. Sit down. Is that gorgeous? That I don't want for you to be people that are living lives of mourning. But on the other hand, I want you to be living lives of aveilut. What is the difference? Rosh Hashanah says that the word aveilut, the word for mourning, comes from the Hebrew root of avar, but enjoy your life, live your life fully, and there's a but. There's nothing missing. But we can have one. I remember hearing Rabbi Wein tell this story in such a Rabbi Wein perfect style that he had just left law to take on his first job as a rabbi in Miami. Wonderful community, and they loved him from the start. So they invited him to barbecue that a bunch of them were having, and it was on this beautiful balcony. My wine said, the chairs were perfectly comfortable, the beer was just cold enough, the grill was just perfect enough. It was just idyllic. So one of the men comes over my wine with his beer, and he says, so rabbi, it doesn't get better than this. And my wine says, that's really scary. And she says, wait a minute, are you okay with Kabbalah? So he said, I'm going back to the Kabbalah. Why? She says, I know you've been eating very clean. You don't get headaches and stomach aches on Motzei Shabbos? She says, I do. Why? She says, because you stopped having sulfites. Your grape juice. Grape juice is heavy on sulfites. This is probably making you very sick. My husband looks at me, tell that to Dr. Simon. And for $4 extra a week, or any increase, no more headaches, no more stomach aches. Because when your system is clean, something could affect it in an easier way. If your system is full of sulfites, okay, bring it on. What's another sulfite? Get it? So if my system is spiritual, and my body is a receptor to spirituality, tears are the sweat of the neshama, because the neshama can't penetrate the body. We're in trouble when we stop crying. We're in trouble when we stop being able to feel. But when we feel, even at happy times, tears of joy, what does that mean? Umacha Hashem Dima, says Rav Schwab, may I call upon it. When Mashiach comes, when we have the mikdash, there won't be tears of joy. There'll just be joy. Because the tears are saying, wait a minute, don't forget, there's still another house to build. There's still more nachas to enjoy together. Dance up a storm. And remember, this ain't nothing compared to how we're going to dance together when those things. Allow yourself to feel hope, to feel the anticipation, and to feel the frustration that we're still there. And that doesn't take away from being a really happy person. Really happy people are people that feel really sad too. You can't be somebody who's numb, because it doesn't work the other way either. We know these people, right? They're always sort of plasticized. Yeah? Am I making sense so far? So far? Yeah? Okay. So let's see where we're going to be a week from now. We're going to be reading these very heavy texts. Called kinos. What is kinos? No, it's too much, it's too hard, it's too sad. What's the point of kinos? And I'll share this with you, and it's life-changing, ladies. What is kinos? Kinos comes from milashon kinyan. When you acquire something, when you invest and make something yours. What's the point of kinos? Kinos is what shows us in a real way. These horrific stories and these very, very sad texts show us what? The consequence of God's withdrawal from the world. When there is not connection, this is what happens. This is what happens when the world is just left to nature. That there's no connection that heals in a way that's miraculous and magical. So why do I read Kinos on Tisha B'Av?
Listen closely. The mita of God's goodness, mita toa rububa mita sakurabios, the mita of God's goodness is 500 times greater than that of his withdrawal and consequences. So if this is the result of disconnect, imagine what connection looks like. Imagine what we have to look forward to. That is, how horrific as this is, we can't imagine how big it's going to be. Does anybody remember after 9/11 that traveling stopped being fun? Do you remember? I was a little kid. We used to dress up to meet people at the airport when they were going to Israel. Do you remember this? We used to dress up, and they would have family parties, take pictures, and go with them until the end, until they got to the airplane. So now, traveling's not fun. After 9/11, traveling became intensely not fun. And I remember a waxman saying this a couple months after 9/11, and it changed my life. He said as follows, do you remember the rule of not being allowed to have security with a water bottle or yogurt, right? And I remember this was painful as a child of a Holocaust survivor. The heaps of water bottles just under the not very drunk in the
place of tikkun. When a baby is born, what's the word for baby, ladies? Tinok. Tinok is the letters of tikkun. That the point of being born is that you could grow, you could heal, you have so much potential. And you could take kinos and turn it into a wish for getting it back on track and experiencing that unbelievable level of connection. So why the moed? Why do we have to call Tisha B'Av a moed? Okay, that's stretching it a bit. Let's understand. The moed of Tisha B'Av is that it's the yontif of crystallizing our emuna. Because emuna has to be alive. It's got to be felt. It's got to be messy. My grandmother, Les Shalom, was a very real woman before it was even in style to be real. She told it like it was. And I remember this like it was yesterday. I was sitting at a state there with my grandparents, Lema Shalom, in Hartford, in Connecticut. And we're all there. We're so proud. We have our notebooks, and we have the stuff that we're ready to say, and it's all earmarked, and we're all prepared, and everybody's going through their stuff and proving what they learned. And my grandmother's sitting there, and she's looking miserable. I said, Mommy, what is it? Are you enjoying the seder there? No. I haven't enjoyed it since we sat down. No. I said, Mommy, you hungry? You want me to take some tea? No, I'm not hungry. This is not a seder. I said, Mommy, what do you mean? You should be so proud. Look at us. We all have our notebooks and we're sharing. She said, what's the point? Yeah, I know what you share.
and stuff. So what does it mean to stay there? She says, I'm sitting here a couple of hours. I haven't seen one person cry. I haven't seen one person start a dance. I haven't heard one person tell a story of what it meant to them. I haven't heard anything but, you know, it's in your papers. Throw out the papers! Throw out the feel the stay there! Could you believe that I remember this? To the point that when I was the principal of a girls' school and we had to decide what to do for Haggadahs, I said, no notes. I was so petrified. I said, no notes. Let the girls come up with questions of their own. Make a Haggadah of their questions and ask them at the Seder. And tell them to come back and share with the class what they learned. Because every family is different and they're going to learn beautiful things. And I think my grandmother might have been proud. She would have preferred nothing. But the beauty of Tisha B'Av is that I proved to myself that I could still feel. Ladies, we're fighting this unbelievable war against negativity. The prime example of negativity is Amalek. What do we say about Amalek? Asher Karcha. He made you cold. He made you numb. In the kids' lexicon nowadays, he made you chill. Do you know this word chill? It's a noun, verb, adverb, adjective. It's a goal. Years ago, there was a young woman who said to me, young kids really want to chill. I think she sent us to the morgue and said, you want ice. Like, that's an inspiration.
But the beauty of saying on Tisha B'Av, the moed is that I grieved in a way that I shared it with God. I have the privilege of showing my love for God in a way that I didn't know was in me. Because now I'm focused not on what I want from him and what's hurting me. Ashley Blocker feels scared. I always share what I'm scared about with God. I'm scared I won't have this, and I'm scared I'll experience that, and I'm scared I can't handle it. But to feel God's pain, to look at every face of a young, gorgeous chayal and say, God, they're kids. To be able to hear a Rachel Goldberg Poland, who I had the close of hearing a couple of weeks ago in Westchester, she got up and she said, I want you all to share a shard of my pain. I'm carrying a lot of it. I just want you to share a shard. And I think that's what Hashem is saying in the 9 days. I know it's not yours, but I'm alone here. Take a shard. You know it hurts. I need company in it. I want to hurt with you. I want to hurt with you. The beauty of that, to be what Viktor Frankl says, is a tragic optimist. Yeah, I know there's good things coming. And I also feel that they're not here yet. And I can be a tragic optimist and dance in both. So the godless, the yontif of Tisha B'Av, is so phenomenal. I want to share something I heard from Rav Brudny that was so precious, like everything he shares. He said very perfectly that the day of the week that Tisha B'Av is on is always the same day of the week that is Seder night of Pesach, right? So we're told that there's a connection, but the connection is a little obscure. That on the one hand, Tisha B'Av is the time that I experience the pain of the lack of Geula. Pesach is the time that I experience the vision of the reality of Geula. So the beauty in life is to have both. Al-matzot merorim yochlu. Put them together, make a sandwich. Have your matzah recognizing the Geula, the redemption. Have your merorim symbolizing the destruction and the hardship. But ladies, ask, chronologically, what should come first? Should I first remember the geula or the hardship? You would think that you'd go from what to what? Miyagol simcha. I would think that I would first remember the merorim and then the matzot. Brittany said, no, just the opposite. Realize that the feeling of merorim is what gets you to geula, because you proved that you won. You
truth that you wanted. Now, I asked a woman who's waiting for something very badly. She's waiting a long time, and she's waiting very loudly.
So I'm waiting, not hurting you. I want you to tell me what you wanted.
Well, I
could. I can say it. What do you want? It's too hard to tell. I don't know. Taste it. Bring that to that. He can relate to that. He also misses stuff. What do you feel? What do you want it for? What's it going to feel like? What are you going to be like in that scene you're having it? So you can think again.
Yeah, I had one of my kids had a number of years going through a medical issue. And I needed a visual. I needed a vision to get me through the hard nights. The sign kill was only a half an hour. So I created a vision. I had my favorite niece that was taking them. And I used to close my eyes and imagine her getting there. She's actually married with a child this month. I had a vision of her getting married. And me being with this child who's hooked up to the nose on a hospital bed and dancing together with my niece. And I replay that again and again. I was busy with that. I shouldn't have been straight in my shoulder. I was playing that scene in my head. I never told anybody about it.
That was my visual. That I knew that we're going to get through this. It's going to be a tremendous symptom of family.
And it was 2 days before the wedding. And my child was home. I'm in the best of shape, but what was that? So my sister calls me. She says, "Hon, I was thinking, I really want us all to enjoy the wedding. Let's leave all the kids home, the babysitters, so we can really just be and enjoy this wedding." And I screeched, "Don't tell me to leave it to her!" And she's like, "What are you looking at?" I said, "You bet I'm busy. No babysitter. This kid's coming to the wedding." She's like, "Man, it's not going to be to the end, did it?" "Trust me." And sure enough, you can never get photographers to take pictures that you want, right? But sure enough, a week after the wedding, for some reason, he took this perfect picture of me and this child and my niece in the circle. And it happened. But even if that vision had not happened the way it had, it's my vision. It's my sanity. I asked Nana Friedman years ago, right after the lot of children died in Monty, all these people. What's the plan? And he said, "Don't worry. And Luna will transfer. Just worry about having it." And I think that's so profound. We're not worried about anxiety. We have it even though it doesn't do anything. And Luna, it'll transfer. So now let's go to my last question. I think that I created a thesis that makes you wonder about the miraculous doing anything wrong. Because I'm telling you that people should feel, and I'm telling you people should be real, and people should process what there is and not hide it. The miraculous were personifying that. They were complaining in a real way. They were sharing their confusion in a real way. They were sharing their hardships in a real way. So why don't we say they were being real? Because what was the difference between the Meraglim sharing their fear of Eretz Yisrael and what we're talking about? Ashlyn Blocker feels fear. Fear is, what's going to be with me? How am I going to get through this? Is this dangerous the way that I can get hurt? Fear isn't feeling for another. Fear, in the case of the Meraglim, was obsessive in fearing themselves. We find through history that there are people that fear in ways that weren't healthy. The wife of Lot, not that talks about the wife of Lot. What happened? There can't be greater proof of Hashem loving you than plucking you out of destruction, just you. Destruction, proof of God being there to you.
She's watching and observing myself. It's not easy for me to very much. My stuff to me so long to get that issue together, it's a shame. She's wondering that herself. So was she feeling? No. She was scared. Ashley Walker feels scared. The Baratlin were scared. We all experience fear. But when fear is not about the here and now, when it's just this abstract about how the past is affecting me, now the future is freezing me, we call that anxiety. And it keeps us from real feeling because it's not. It's not. So the Miraculous were the antithesis of feeling for God. Because if they felt for God, they'd say, we're really scared, Hashem. But I know you got out of it. I'm going to do this one for you. I don't know how I'm bringing you into nature. I would much rather stay in the life of miracles. I'd much rather have that luxury life of not feeling the hardship. But I guess you know best. And I want to feel for you. And I want to make a world for you. He wrote on me. I'm building on the English. Because not that I can relate to it. I love it for you. The first time as a cow, being in the mikvah, knowing the kind of house you want, and saying, wait a minute, you deserve one too. That feeling is what we're after on Tisha B'Av. So pain is a portal to that growth. It's a portal to having that sense of knowing that I now prove the privilege of the pain of feeling for a God that I could love. And that is a woman. That a woman has a reference to create that space of holding, and a woman is the aim of and not that believes that the pain is going to get us somewhere and we're not just going to be stuck in the pain. We hold it and we move. We hold it and we grow and we know it's going to be more. The reshen, the aim. Regardless of whether or not we have our own children, we are the personification of the aim cultivated. That we have a movement. That every part of life could be lived in order to be afraid of it. And what's the glory of your feeling? When I was going through this hospitalization time with my child, I remember it was like 30 years ago. I remember being home, no cell phones in those days. So I'd been out of commission. I was running home to pick up a few things to go. And the phone rang. It was a friend, and I figured, okay, it must be important. So I picked up, she says, honey, where have you been? I said, you know what, I can't hear you. It's so hard, but it's not like everyone is that hard. I mean, I've gotten in here in 2 weeks. She said, I'm so sorry, I haven't been to you. I had to go back to the hospital now. She said, no, that's enough. You can't always tell. Everyone's got it hard today. And I said, I'm so sorry. I got to run to go back to neurosurgery. So I hang up. I couldn't go back until I called my mother. I said, Ma, what is this? She said, I have to warn you. We didn't have a real struggle after this is over. So I said, I know, we have a lot of years to know. We didn't have a hard time taking people's problems seriously that you know are not a real struggle. We've got it for them. That's big. You've got to hold it for her, too. That's where she's at, and you have to feel it, even though